It takes 6 minutes to copy IP, 6 months to copy IT. It takes 6 years to copy a culture. If you can build an amazing culture, then people won't want to leave, and the ones that do won't be able to compete with you.
Welcome to the Real Estate Pros Podcast, the weekly show for real people in the business of residential sales and property management. Ready to talk insights and inspiration with today's guest, here's your host, Josh Cobb.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Real Estate Pros. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I am your host, Josh Cobb, and this is the weekly show for people in the business of residential sales and property management, where we interview real estate pros and industry experts from all across Australia and around the world, getting to know them a little more personally and the stories behind their success to help you take your career to another level. And I'm excited about this week's show. I'm speaking with Jacob Aldridge, an international business coach with Sherlaws Australia. Jacob is going to share with us his background working in the real estate industry. We're going to discuss the systems that you can apply to take your business to the next level, and how to build a more sustainable and profitable real estate business. But before we catch up with Jacob, I have another discovery I'd like to share with you this week. So let's do that right now.
Today's show is brought to you by Business Depot, real estate specialists, accountants, and business advisors. From startup to growth or succession, muscle up and raise the bar of your real estate business. Check them out at businessdepot.com.au.
Now, have you ever created procedures or systems in your business and then handed them over to the person who you would like to help you with that procedure or task, and it just doesn't quite get done the way that you wanted it to get done? And sometimes that has to do with the fact that you can't really communicate everything in that procedure through a checklist or in just in text. So there's an app that we've started using quite a lot, especially with our virtual assistants when we're handing tasks over to them. And it's called ScreenFlow 5. And what this app allows you to do is create screen captures or screen recordings from not only your computer, but also your mobile device. So you can plug your phone straight into your computer, and it will capture anything that you're doing on your phone in real time. So a really great way of recording procedures and handing them over to someone else in the office rather than just creating a standard paper-based checklist. Not only can you record the computer and the phone at the same time, but you can have your webcam on as well. So, and it's just a really great way of handing over tasks and procedures to someone else in the business. Now, it is worth pointing out that it is currently only available for Mac users. So if you are looking for a PC or Windows equivalent, you might like to jump onto Google and look at some comparisons. But if you are using Mac in your business, I certainly encourage you to go and have a look at this software. It's really, really smart. Go to telestream.net/ScreenFlow. You can download a free trial, and you're not limited to time with that trial. So you can It's a free trial forever, but there will be watermarks on the videos that you record. So that is a limitation to the free trial. It's $99 to purchase the full version, but I certainly encourage you, it will be well worth it if you're looking for smarter ways to create procedures and tasks and checklists and things like that for your business. And with that, let's transition over to this week's featured guest. Well, I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Jacob Aldridge, an international business coach with Sherlaws Australia. Having recently returned from 2 years in London, where he was the UK head of operations, Jacob coached a small suite of clients who averaged 40% revenue growth while moving through a double dip recession. Jacob has also assisted more than 200 clients in Australia, Europe, and the UK, and continues to work with energetic young companies generating $1.5 to $17 million in annual revenue, or those who are seeking to do so. Jacob, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here, Josh. I've long been told I've got a face for radio, and I guess today is a face for podcast.
You and me both will be in this together. I've given our listeners a brief overview, Jacob, but take a minute, tell us a little bit more about you personally and give us an overview of your business.
Sure. It's interesting timing, actually, to be having this conversation. It's 15 years this month since I started my real estate career. And the agency, funnily enough, that I was working with back in those days, we were up for REIQ Agency of the Year Award. And the organisation that beat us actually got up on stage and thanked Sherlaw's business coaching as part of their acceptance speech. So I kind of kept bumping into Sherlaw's going through my real estate career to the point where several years later, I was the state operations manager for Harcourts Queensland, got an invitation to come to a Sherlaw's event, walked in thinking, you know, this might be great for us as a business, you know, possibly a client, walked out thinking, okay, I want to be a coach and I want to work with these guys. 9 years, as you shared, several hundred clients around the world later. I'm still here, still doing it, still loving changing people's lives. And, you know, one of the things I love about Sherlaw's is our team approach to working with our businesses. So I've got a team that specializes in building those growth management systems. And then Sherlaw's group as an overall organization is this portfolio of companies that help private enterprise to grow, fund, and exit, going through all of the stages of their life cycle.
Well, Jacob, having known you for some time, and full disclosure to our listeners for that, and having you help us with our business in one way, shape, or form, it was fascinating to me the challenges that every business faces in the life cycle on its journey as a business, or the similarities that they all face in the life cycle in that journey. Something that Sherlaw's make very clear with their modelling. Can you break down the life cycle of a business for our listeners and explain the more critical moments so our listeners might resonate with where they might be in their own journey?
Absolutely. Our stages life cycle framework was developed initially out of interviews and research we did with 700 private businesses, mostly here in Australia. And since then, that was kind of 16 years ago, we've applied it in detail to over 6,000. So we've really tested the robustness. And what surprised me when I first saw it, surprises a lot of the clients when they first get the opportunity, is how every business moves through the same defined life cycle. Now, some move fast and some move slow, but it's the same journey. And as a result, if you know where your business is on its journey and you know where your team is, then it will help you make better, faster decisions. You can communicate them more clearly. You can kind of get on with the business. So to walk through it at a high level, at first, starting up a new business is frantic. Pedal to the metal, lots of wheel spin, trying to make it all happen. Eventually, you gain some traction, but that traction really just drives you into what we call the first brick wall. In the first brick wall, a business will feel more confident. This is the invest stage. You need to invest in getting your business model right. John Knight from Business Depot, actually, Josh, on your podcast a few weeks ago, talked about the need to go into business with really clear expectations, your eyes wide open, which I agree with entirely. I see a lot of small real estate agencies, for example, that get stuck in that first brick wall for years because they either don't want to invest the cash that they need to, or they really don't know how, don't know where to spend the money. Those that do get the investment right will move into good times. The phones start ringing, sales numbers are climbing, great agents in the area want to come and work with you. You start being consistently profitable. And a business can spend a long time in good times really just enjoying it, making the most of that profit. The next stage after that is when the business reaches payback. So they get a high-level success. The feeling there is euphoria. You're 10 foot tall and bulletproof, super, super successful. It's when you as a business owner or the principal realize your initial vision. You know, there was something that drove you to set up your own business, your own agency. Payback is when you achieve that. And the great news is it always feels even better than you think it will. The less great news is most businesses don't actually get there because they don't make those investments to start off with. For those that do reach there, unfortunately, it doesn't last forever. That euphoria gives way to a whole lot of other sensations and emotions. You've achieved your goals, so what's now driving you? What's motivating you? You've built a business, but it's now like a freight train. It's driving you, not the other way around. Sales numbers increase, the number of agents you've got, properties under management will continue to go up, but you start to feel a little bit disconnected from it. And the feelings that we hear from the business owners that are at that stage, they're frustrated, they're stressed, and eventually they hit the second brick wall, and the feeling there is disillusionment. They're over it. They've built a successful business, it just doesn't feel successful anymore. And that's a really – it's a sad place to find a business owner, because they've built something of value. You really want to help them realize the value that they've got there, but they're sitting in this world of hurt. And there's three ways that a business can exit the second brick wall. You can plateau. So pre-GFC, for example, we saw a lot of old school real estate agencies, you know, they were really just a selling principle, you know, a small little office and, you know, a strip off the main street. And they were just coasting their way into retirement, you know, with a few sales every quarter. So plateau is one way you can go. Decline is another, where a business might implode quickly or die slowly, but they just don't really make it out of that wall in a sustainable way. And the third choice for a business that is disillusioned is to move into advanced growth, to go through the next round of investment that they need to create a business that's bigger than them but isn't dependent on them in any way. The feeling up there is pride from having successfully created such a business, you know, where it relies on nobody. It grows strategically. Here in Australia, across all industries, about 6% of businesses actually make it through to advanced growth. Most die in that first brick wall, and a lot in the second brick wall. So to those listeners out there who've been through the whole journey, you know, congratulations, big pat on the back. And I'm sure you get a lot of phone calls from other agents that are kind of wanting to know what your secret is. In terms of, so what, you know, what does that mean? How does a business apply that? What we ask our clients first is, where is their business on the journey? You know, is it feeling frantic in startup? Are they investing? Are they in good times? Or maybe, you know, they're in payback and they've got the new car or the new house, the big holiday, all kind of happening. Are they frustrated, disillusioned, completely over it? Where you are on your journey guides which type of strategy is best for you. And the simplest example I can give is businesses, real estate agencies before payback are probably more likely to be focused on building revenue creation systems. Businesses after payback, it's much more around infrastructure systems, improving productivity and profitability. Your mileage may vary, but that's a really good rule of thumb. Know where you are on the journey, and that can help focus what you need to be doing and what you don't need to be doing yet.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Jacob. We'll try and get a link to an image or a graphic of some sort, just explaining that in a little more detail in the show notes for our listeners if they want to check that out later. But I think what's important there is for all of you who are listening is to really just close your eyes for a minute and think about where you are on that journey and be really upfront and honest about that. And for everyone listening, I've been through this process with Jacob myself, and I can tell you it's quite and being there when you've gone through it with another business as well, Jacob, and it's quite an interesting look on the faces of the business owners when they think they're at one point, but really they're not. And it's quite fascinating and humbling and sobering and all those feelings at the same time, really, isn't it?
Well, and importantly, most importantly, a lot of business owners feel that they're alone, that they're the only ones who are creating these problems that are stuck. And the reality is that every business goes through the same journey. And a lot of those business owners who feel that they're the only ones who are here, it's because they're the rare ones that have actually been as successful as they are. So not only are they beating themselves up when they don't need to be, but they actually ought to be patting themselves on the back. And that's one of the most rewarding things about what my team gets to do is, you know, you can quite quickly go, here's where you're at, that's perfectly normal, and here's what you need to do to get out of it. And just the years of stress that have built up dropping away off a principal's face is priceless.
Definitely. Well, Jacob, something I know you speak a lot about is the importance of understanding capacity in a business. How important is this to get right in a real estate business specifically? And what are some of the sure signs that a real estate business are either getting it very right or very wrong?
Yeah, I think the two key frameworks that we use to help, you know, get a business owner aware of where they're at, what their choices are stages and capacity. And I'll make sure we get some information on this for your listeners as well. Every agency that I've worked with has said they want to grow. But as a goal, growth, and I kind of put it in air quotes, growth is so vague a goal that it's basically meaningless. You know, do you want to grow the number of sales you're doing each month, or do you want to grow the profit that the business is giving you? Do you want to grow the number of properties you manage, or do you want to grow their AAMI? The strategy for each of those is very, very different. And if you, as a principal, say, I want to grow, you tell your team you need them to grow, they can actually do two very, very separate things that both look like growth. So we try and bring a business back to understanding how to use capacity to understand their business. And I'll walk everybody through a little bit of an exercise. If you think of your business like it's a cup, so a cup has an amount of capacity, you know, it can hold a certain amount of water, and that water represents revenue. So the amount of water you've got in your cup is the amount of revenue you're generating in your business. So what I'd encourage listeners to ask themselves first and foremost is, if they think about their cup, is it full or is it empty? Because that's going to tell you whether you need to fill the cup by increasing revenue, or whether if you've got quite a full cup, you actually need to grow the cup, get a bigger cup, and increase your capacity. So when I talk about growth, I talk about growing the cup. Most of the agencies that I work with, their focus needs to be more on filling the cup, growing, increasing revenue. Give you some examples of where I've seen it work and not work. I met with a principal many years ago now who had one cup, he had one office that was about 20% full. So he wasn't
profitable. So when you say full, Jacob, just help us understand what you mean by that.
Sure. So, you know, his business had the ability to generate a certain amount of revenue, had a capacity. So he had about four agents in there. Back in those days in his area, we would say that one agent would have the capacity to make eight sales a month. And you don't expect everyone to run at 100%. That's unrealistic. We generally target at about 75. So the targets were six sales per agent per month. So he had a lot of capacity. The agents themselves were averaging about one sale a month. So we said they're running at about 20%. So he had a lot of space in his cup, and he wasn't making any money because he only had a little bit of water. Now, his solution to "I'm not making any money," and I might add it was encouraged by his franchise group, was to go and buy the neighboring territory. And what that meant was he doubled the size, the number of agents that he had, therefore doubled the sales capacity. But he didn't actually add any more sales as a result of that. So now he had a cup that was twice as big. He felt like he was growing, and that's what he needed to do. But instead of being 20% full and not making any money, he now only had 10%. So he had the same amount of revenue and in a cup, number of agents that was twice the size.
Yeah.
And the strategy that he really needed was, okay, how do you fill the cup? Stop growing. Focus on the efficiencies you need to build in. We ran a training program with his agents and helped him look at his marketing strategy, you know, how to get the brand out into that marketplace, get the listings in, get the sales in, you know, other peripherals like vendor paid advertising and that kind of thing. You need to fill this cup with water. Stop growing. Now, the flip side happens. It's less common where you get an agency that is full and doesn't want to grow. You know, more boutique agencies tend to be in this sort of space where they're quite relaxed with the level of sales they've got, the size of the cup. They don't want more agents. They don't want a bigger office. And that in and of itself can be a problem because you're opening yourselves up to being steamrolled by another agency coming in and innovating. Because you've stopped investing in growth, you can get out innovated. I don't see that a lot in the marketplace anymore. In particular, here in Queensland, where most of my clients are based, the deregulation of commissions in 2014 has allowed some of those boutique agencies to innovate through pricing and packaging. So they found a way to grow that doesn't involve having to put more bums on seats. You also asked, I think, around, you know, how do you know if you're making a mistake? And part of it is you've got to do your own numbers. What is your capacity? In a perfect world, how much could your business generate in revenue each month or each quarter? And how are you going against that? Do you need to fill the cup or do you need to grow? And the surest sign for me that a real estate business is getting it very wrong is when their strategy is based on what other people are doing. what they're reading on the internet, what they're taking from a podcast, what, you know, maybe the team that won platinum at their recent awards happens to be doing, without understanding their own capacity and their own life cycle. Because a great strategy for someone else might be completely the wrong strategy for you. And you need to take all of the learnings that you get and apply them to your business and see how they work rather than just running with it.
Yeah, I don't think you can replicate success from agent to agent or business to business or even area to area, Jacob. And I totally agree with you that a lot of the people that we've had on the show have experienced their own degree of success, but all so, so very different in their own marketplaces and their own definitions of capacity. But real estate business, I'd love to switch and have a look at systems in a real estate business, and it's something that every real estate business is built on or should be built on. And whether it's systems for their sales department or property management departments or even administration systems, they're always looking to make them more efficient and profitable. So as a business coach, what are some of the other critical systems that a real estate business should be focusing on, in your opinion?
Again, it depends on where they are within their journey, within their life cycle, as to which ones are going to be critical. But what we have seen through our years of kind of working with businesses and research is there is a formula to growing a business. At its simplest form, you can look at it as grow, fund, exit. You know, a startup business will have a rush of growth, all that franticness, but needs to have that investment, which needs to be funded. Now, fund can mean putting your money in, you know, your hand into your own pocket, or maybe you do take on some investors, and all the way up to Silicon Valley and let's raise $20 million. The size of the funding is going to be related to the next bit of growth. And sometimes businesses go round and round and round that grow fund cycle for many, many decades even before they get to an exit. But if you think about grow, then fund, and exit's got to be somewhere in the mix. What we've seen with businesses that go through that is there are these real common points where they get stuck. You know, two really common examples, about 80,000 a year and at around 750,000 a year revenue. A lot of businesses get sucked into a black hole at those points and just really struggle to get out of them. Now, if you know what some of those milestones are, where those black holes are, then you can look at what you need to do to blast through them rather than getting stuck within them. And that's where systems become critical. And I'm not just talking about IT platforms and those kind of things. They play a part. But in particular, the business systems or the growth management systems that you put in place so that the business is building on itself instead of, you know, constantly having to come back to you as a principal or you as a top selling agent having to do all the training. Within those black hole points, and I mentioned 80,000, 750,000 a year, 17 million is the next one. Within those black holes, there are some common points of no man's land where a business again can get stuck. It's less severe. You kind of get stuck going through a point of lower productivity. And each of those is related to a revenue system. So first and foremost that a business needs to look at is its revenue systems. And that covers sales. So what's your consistent sales process? It covers channels. How are you as a business consistently generating leads instead of it being ad hoc? There's product. Now, how do you as a business manage multiple products? So it can be as simple as sales and property management, which feed off each other. And then the last of the critical revenue systems is brand. Now, for those who invest in a franchise or a network group, brand is around how do you implement that brand in your marketplace. For independents, you might be asking, how do I build a brand? And obviously one of the benefits of going through a franchise is you get given a lot of the brand collateral, which you can then leverage much faster and then helping build the system for you. So they're the four key revenue systems: sales, channels, products, brand. They need to be supported in your agency by your infrastructure systems. This is where a lot of great salespeople fall over when they go out into their own agency. They've got all those revenue systems at some level. They don't build the infrastructure. And here I'm talking about capacity management, which we've talked about, what we call functionality or red, blue, black, which is, you know, how do you allocate resource in your business? You know, are you just doing the sales yourself, or are you what we call a black strategic kind of principle? Who's managing the red administration in your office? Because if you get that blurred, you've just got the wrong people doing the wrong job rather than the right people. And then the third key infrastructure is capability, making sure that all of the people in your business have the skills that they need. So infrastructure, it's capacity, functionality, capability, right number of people doing the right jobs with the right skills. And, of course, the last system that really determines how fast you will achieve your success is your culture system.
Yes, I was hoping you'd bring this up.
And I could talk for weeks about culture. You know, at its simplest, when I talk about culture as a system, you know, it's not just, okay, well, once a year we have a Christmas party or an end of financial year celebration, or we do a monthly breakfast. Culture is the experience your team have when they come into the office every day. And what you need to be doing as a principal is having a system that supports that culture. And that covers three key areas. You know, have you got a clear vision that the business is working towards? Have you got clear values that act as decision-making filters for your company? And are you managing the behaviors? So, you know, there is something we've actually recently launched, which is a behavior management system to support culture that has a look at things like communication, risk, role, pace, these kind of critical behavioral tools that impact the day-to-day. And that's what makes a culture system.
And there's a little saying that I won't quote you on it because I can't quite remember how it goes, but something to do, something along the lines of it takes, 6 minutes to copy a system, 6 days. I'll let you keep going, Jacob.
Well, it takes 6 minutes to copy IP, you know, your intellectual property. You know, someone with a USB stick can copy all of the letters from your agency. 6 minutes to copy IP, 6 months to copy IT, your IT systems. It takes 6 years to copy a culture. And what that tells me, and it tells the businesses that I've worked with, is if you can build an amazing culture, then people won't want to leave, and the ones that do won't be able to compete with you because they might have similar systems, but they just don't have that core to change management that you do. And we've even seen, you know, to a valuation perspective, those businesses that have got great culture, talent, capability are achieving a higher sale price than the businesses that don't. Now, sometimes it gets wrapped up in goodwill and all of those kind of general terms, but culture not only increases profit, it increases valuation and the speed with which you grow from one to the other.
Yeah, it's something I'm personally so passionate about, Jacob. If anyone was to jump onto our website, they would see our core values displayed for everyone to see. It's something we all live by. Everyone who works for us understands our core values and knows them. And it astounds me sitting down with business owners today. And even if they've got their core values displayed on their desk or the wall behind them, and you would ask them what their core values are, and very, very few could recite those core values or tell you what they are. So I'm keen to get your thoughts, Jacob. Is something like that a sure sign that if they don't understand the core values or don't know them, does the culture need a little more attention?
Absolutely. I think a lot of cultural exercises, and I went through a lot myself in my employee days, you know, it's let's have a nice conversation or let's get some stuff up on a wall. It ignores that day-to-day element, which is culture. People are always willing to have the positive conversations. You know, what are our values? So Sherlaw's values, for example, are open, honest, and fair. Now, it's very, very easy. You know, I'd love to talk about all the ways in which we're open, all the ways in which we're honest, all the ways in which we're fair, what that means to us, what the activities are. The positives are very, very easy to talk about. It's when you have to apply those values to hard decisions that determines whether or not you're actually implementing your culture or it is just a nice thing on a wall. And so, again, to give the Sherlaw's example, this afternoon we've got all of our Queensland coaches, so spread out across a few teams, coming together. We're all investing our entire afternoon in a culture session where we've got an external culture coach coming in to work with us to go, okay, in what ways are you personally not living the values? In what ways is this business not living the values? Let's have the hard conversation, because that's the only way you can really make sure that the culture is embedded in every individual. If it's once a year, some values on a wall, no one can remember them, then they're not using them, they're not applying it. That doesn't mean anything. It means it doesn't mean anything to your team. It doesn't mean anything to your clients. It's just marketing guff. And you can say whatever you want in marketing. People remember how you make them feel, and that comes from culture.
Well, Jacob, take us to today. What is Sherlaw's working on that is fresh and new and exciting?
The big things at the moment are what we see as, you know, leveraging these the systems conversation into what I call portfolio approach. So we see with small business owners, and you know, this covers 90%+ of the businesses within Australia, and certainly within the real estate world, you get a balance of short-term income focus and long-term equity focus. What I mean by that is, you speak to most business owners, you know, how are you feeling about revenue? How are you feeling about, you know, funnel management, pipeline? They'll be entirely caught up in short-term revenue. And that might mean 2-3 years, but, you know, they've got no long-term consistency of income. And that means that they're feeling anxious. They're, you know, uncertain about the long-term viability of the business. Day-to-day, they feel that anxiety. The reason why we as business owners do that, put up with that kind of thing, as I'm sure you're familiar with, Josh, as well, is the long-term equity, which is, we hope one day we'll be able to sell this for billions. Someone's going to ride in on their white horse from China and offer us 10 times what the business is worth, and we'll be able to retire. So small business owners live in an anxious and hopeful kind of feeling, which really kind of sucks, if I can use the technical term.
Sure.
Because if you're focused on that, then you're not being able to grow, you're not being able to put the time you want to into things like culture, team development, that kind of thing. What our growth management systems do is help shift the focus from short-term income to long-term income. Because when you've got those systems, when you've got the culture, then you've got a business that is bringing in revenue. It's not dependent on you as the owner anymore to bring in that revenue. You can relax around the short-term income because you know you've got the systems and channels in place for the long-term. And once you relax around that income, it creates a whole lot of other opportunities for you to have in an equity and an income space. So I got one client at the moment, for example, they were very much in that short-term space. You know, profit margin was very, very tight. They knew that 3 months of the year they would lose money every year, and they'd spend the next 9 months trying to save up enough to cover it. That kind of cycle had gone on for 6 or 7 years. It was predated the GFC. They couldn't blame any external forces. We put in place those infrastructure systems that I mentioned, and as a result, the income stability is there. They had one bad month this year. The rest were profitable. And off the back of that, they've actually set up two separate companies in kind of adjacent fields. So they've gone from one company with, you know, short-term income needs screaming at them to three companies, all of them bringing in revenue that they feel confident for the long term. And as the business owners, what that means for the equity that they've built is that suddenly that's multiplied many, many times. The hardest part is taking that first step, is pulling your head out of the anxious income space for long enough to invest in those systems, the assets that are going to give you the choices to build a portfolio around yourself instead of just one stream.
Well, Jacob, I think it's where a lot of business owners fall down, and I've seen a lot of businesses go out of business where they're too focused on making a sale today over building a sustainable business. And at the end of the day, sales is what keeps the doors open in a real estate business. But what would you say to a business owner who is struggling a little bit with the building of a sustainable business, and, you know, at the end of the day, they're just scrambling to make sales to try and keep the doors open?
Look, the beautiful thing about the real estate industry, and there's a couple, which is why, you know, I may have somewhat left, but I will certainly never leave. It's not an industry that wastes a good relation. The downturn comes in, clears out all of the cowboys, you know, all of those good agencies, agents survive. And we're now flipping back, I think, into a bit of a market where, you know, people see that maybe there's easy money in real estate. Certainly not, you know, the long-term people that I've talked about, they're looking for growth. But there are cowboys, I think, starting to come back into the industry. The easiest thing, and it's a lot easier to say than to do, the easiest thing is to recognize that those who build relationships in their community will make money out of real estate for the long term. And they might make a little bit less money this year, but it's going to be so much easier next year and the year after and the year after because you've built those relationships, you've made that investment. So I think most agents intellectually get that. It's the emotional, well, how do I actually do that? You know, when there's someone else who's cutting their commission or they're kind of, you know, really pushing those ethical boundaries to make the sale, how do I emotionally not get sucked into that? And the biggest part is that culture. It's the values. It's having a good principle, or for those principles, having either a network or your, you know, franchise regional manager, whoever it might be, that you can have those conversations with. And that's certainly some of the work we've done as coaches with the top agencies we've worked with is, you know, they've come to us so that we can help them hold firm on their values so they can then hold their team firm on the values. And that's why those agencies are still here and are still making good money, whereas the ones they were fighting against 5 years ago have gone out of business.
Well, Jacob, thanks so much for your input so far. We're about to hit the fast five where I'll ask you five quick questions and get you to come back with five quick answers. But before we do, let's hear our fast fact of the week. This week's fast fact comes from the Steps Real Estate Industry Social Media Survey, where we interviewed real estate professionals from all around the country about how they use social media to market their business. We found that 95% of real estate professionals are using Facebook to market their business, but only 13% of real estate professionals have a blog. I want you all to think for a moment about what you would do if Facebook shut down tomorrow. What would happen to all of those thousands of likes that you've spent years accumulating? Your blog is a platform that you own, and it has the ability to build thought leadership and in so gain subscribers that you can communicate with without any interference from outside sources. I encourage you all to consider what content that your communities want to consume and start delivering it to them consistently by way of your blog with the sole purpose of building email subscribers. I'm keen to hear what's working for you. Drop me a line via our website, Facebook, or Twitter. Well, Jacob, we've reached one of my favourite parts of the show where I'll ask you five quick questions and get you to come back with five quick answers. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Buzzers ready.
Fantastic. Name one person who has been an inspiration to you throughout your career and why.
Going to pick, and not just because of the real estate connection. Patrick Dixon employed me as a Saturday girl way back in the year 2000. I was studying journalism at the time. I realized there was no money in journalism. Someone had given me a book on, you know, investing in property, making money out of real estate. I thought, oh, well, that's an industry where, you know, if I learn a little bit more about that as a part-time job, then I'll be able to, you know, kind of maybe make money through that, through the journalism career that I saw in front of me. And Patrick saw potential in me. Got me on board, as I say, as the Saturday girl, the casual sales administrator. I think it was the politically correct description, but I know most of the listeners would be familiar with Saturday girl. I learned so much from him. By the time I finished university, I'd fallen in love with real estate. That was, you know, where I wanted to spend my career. Journalism was long gone. And Patrick offered me a full-time job. I worked there for many years. But yeah, what I got from him was leadership, genuine leadership, an awful lot of skills and experience around branding, around building a legacy through the River book that he wrote. And I think most importantly, you know, outside of all of the industry or even the business stuff, just what it was like to be an actual gentleman in the modern world. So yeah, Patrick was a big influence on me then and still today.
Jacob, what is your favorite thing in the world to do when you're not at the office?
And I'm glad to say I don't spend an awful lot of time at the office. I have a dream. I have a dream to locate the world's finest stracciatella gelati.
That is definitely a first for the show. You're going to have to elaborate. This will be the slow five for this episode, all right? Just to let you explain this.
So I've done a little bit of travel with my beautiful wife. We've been to, I think last count, it was about 1/7 of the countries in the world. I like ice cream. I set myself the challenge on our honeymoon when we went to Italy. I figured to compare ice cream, you couldn't just go for the fancy flavors. So stracciatella, which is basically vanilla choc chip, is a fairly standard kind of flavor and a good baseline for comparing gelati places. So I want to find the best choc chip gelati in the world. I'm happy to take any recommendations your listeners might have. The current leader is a small little gelati place just off the main square in Siena in Italy, both for the quality of their gelati and also just the mammoth size of the ice cream cones that it comes in. So that's winning, but I've got 6/7 of the world's countries to explore, and I'm going to keep going until I've tried them all and I've found the best.
Fantastic. Well, I don't know if you've tried it when I was living down in Ascot in Brisbane. For those of you playing at home, is kind of in the northeast of Brisbane suburbs. And there is a little gelati place we used to frequent quite regularly. I think it's owned by Tatiana Grigoriova, the Olympic pole vaulter, called Milani Gelati. And I think they've just opened up a store, a couple of the Westfields around the place as well. So I don't know if you've been there, Jacob, but there's a one to try.
I haven't. And if anyone can jump over the high bar that I've set, sounds like Tatiana Grigoriova would be
that nice way to wrap that up. Jacob, what is your favorite business book that you've ever read and why?
Okay, left field answer. Mr. God, This Is Anna, which is not directly a business book and it's certainly not a religious book. It's a pretty short little book. It's a beautiful tale about seeing the world differently and applying a higher context to your decision making. So to me, it links very, very much into setting a culture, setting an intent, having a direction for your life and for those of us who choose to build a business, for your business. And I've said before that if it was called Hello World, This Is Anna, then there'd be a copy of this book in every Silicon Valley CEO's office. It's a beautiful book. Mr. God, This Is Anna, highly recommend it.
Jacob, what is your favorite technology or online resource that you use daily to help you run a better business?
My favorite piece of business technology would have to be the coffee machine at Beanbag Cafe around the corner from me in North Brisbane. That certainly gets me through a lot. Unfortunately, I don't get to use it every day. So in terms of an everyday technology, I'm not as technical as I look. The biggest piece for me is text messaging. Like, I just got to say, you know, we take it for granted and similar for email, short asynchronous communication to just keep the fluidity of conversation going. You know, I spend a lot of time in meetings doing presentations to, you know, the clients can ping me and team members with questions and go back and forth via text messaging. Use it a lot. I think it's an invaluable resource and something that we're beginning to take for granted, you know, in a world of Snapchat and Uber.
Well, something I'm surprised you didn't mention as a favorite resource of yours, Jacob, is connector pens. I know for a fact that the Share Laws coaches are always carrying these connector pens around. I'm sure you've got shares in Faber-Castell, but you'll have to explain it to our listeners, Jacob, why Share Laws have this fascination with connector pens.
So the connector pen's a big part of the Share Laws brand, and those of you who do have children or a Share Laws business coach will know exactly what we're talking about. They're the yeah. Coloured texters with the little clip lids that click into each other. The lids, funnily enough, this is a very slow five, are actually designed such that if they get swallowed by a small child, they've actually still got an airway through them. That's the clippy bit, is actually a breathing hole for children should they swallow the lid of the coloured texters. You know, we use colour a lot. Colour is an extra dimension when it comes to taking notes, sharing communication. If you do everything in black pen, blue pen, you know, you're kind of missing an opportunity to really bring it alive. So all of our diagrams, if you download some of the resources, Josh, that I'll send to you, you know, you'll see the color right the way throughout. It's an important part of learning and communicating. And so that's a big part of why we use the colored pens. Plus, they're a little bit of fun. We don't have shares in Faber-Castell. It's actually, to my knowledge, it's still a private enterprise. It's a privately owned small business in Germany. They recently celebrated we sent them a card back in 2012 to congratulate them on their 250th anniversary. So they are a company that has been around and focused on stationery and successful at it for longer than the entire Australia, you know, Western civilization has existed in Australia. Great business success story. Sadly, don't have shares, but love them.
Jacob, it's often said that the success of a real estate business is measured by how many properties they sell or how many properties they manage. If you had to choose one thing that prevents people in real estate from achieving success, what would it be and what would your advice be to overcome it?
Let me connect three of the conversations I've had so far. The first brick wall where businesses need to invest, the black holes that businesses need to invest to get around, and something we touched on that I'll reinforce, that a lot of business owners go looking for fixes, quick fix, not a system. They want to take the cheap and dirty way out, not invest in a system. The individual agents who are stuck earning around that $80,000 a year in commission, they're the ones who are trying to do it all themselves. Their fear around money, around not having enough money, means that they, in their personal, you know, commission-based business, they reach the investment brick wall, never invest, always look for the fix, not the long-term system, and they try and do everything themselves. It's the same for principals and agencies, sales and property management. It's not that hard to have an agency generating $750,000 a year in fees. You know, that's a couple of sales a month. It's a small rent roll. The systems that get you to that point are not the systems that will get you past there. So if you want to grow, then you need to find the right external advisors, mentors to guide you and to help you understand which systems you need to invest in and when. Invest, get the returns, not just try and do the quick fix.
Jacob, I have one last question for you to leave our listeners with some motivation for the week ahead. What's your favorite success quote and how do you think people in real estate can relate to it?
Very, very simple one. Income follows assets. So in every business, when I talk to them about building assets and valuation, I actually use property as my go-to example because people understand it. You buy a house, you have an asset, the rental income follows. Income follows assets. But for most people, when they think about business, and this includes agents as well as the principals, they're focusing on income first, not assets first. The entire property industry is built on investment and wealth. From homeowners to developers, everything in between, they're building assets. And yet there's all of these small agents and agencies who are nibbling around at the edges, creating income, but no wealth for themselves. So what you need to do to apply that mantra that I've got is invest in yourself, invest in your business, invest directly into property, practice what you preach, grow your assets, not just your income, because the business or the portfolio assets that you build now will pay you back over and over again as long as you create them first. Income will follow assets.
Well, listeners, you can find all of the resources that Jacob has shared with us today along with all of the show notes by visiting our website at steps.com.au/Jacob Aldridge. And I think we've only really just scratched the surface here, Jacob. So, and I think people's minds are blowing just a little bit. And on behalf of our listeners, I'd like to thank you for your time, knowledge, and advice today. I know that people are going to enjoy the content you've shared. How can people get in touch with you or find out more about Sherlaws?
Sure. Well, first of all, absolute pleasure to be here. Big fan of the show, and it's great to have a chance to share some of this with your listeners. The best way to find out more, sherlawsgroup.com is our website. And if you Google Sherlaws or Jacob Aldridge, you'll certainly find an awful lot of resources and some really great photos of me that just kind of go to prove that I do indeed have the face for podcasts.
Jacob, thanks so much.
Pleasure, Josh. Talk soon.
Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you do enjoy the Real Estate Pros podcast, we love reviews to help us get found. So please head over to iTunes and let us know how the show has helped you. And whether you did or you didn't enjoy the show, we'd love to hear from you about how we can improve. Because at the end of the day, the show has all started to help you, the real estate pro. Until next time, I'm Josh Cobb. I hope you have a great week ahead, and I look forward to having you join us again next week. Bye for now.